Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Titan's Vengeance by Ralph Kern, narrated by Jeffrey Kafer. Chapter 1. Captain Cutter. Ishtar System. The Sphere. KSS Achilles. The fleet of 17 immensely powerful warships drove forward on furious plumes of plasma fire. Their destination, a ramshackle collection of girders and old-fashioned modular components which cluster together to form Algon Station, a place which offered harbor for the most destitute of ships, unable to afford the berthing costs of other more respectable homes. And, in a manner of speaking, that was still true for those who had found respite here now. The chaotic lattice grid arrays, evolved rather than designed from tramp freighters, asteroid miners, and sphere boats, instead held the shattered remnants of the Aurelian Republic Navy's once proud and powerful fleet. Captain Hal Cutter looked over the sprawling base through the theater-sized forward screen, a sense of tragic sadness washing through him. The ships of what had once been one of the finest navies in the Arcadian sector had found refuge here from the hegemony armies spreading across their worlds. They'd fled far from home, hiding under the shadow of the mysterious ancient Ishtar sphere encompassing the system's primary star. The bridge staff sat subdued as Captain Hal Cutter looked on, his arms folded. A woman's face appeared looming large, obscuring Algon Station. Her features should show exhaustion, lined with stress and worry from carrying the weight of a star nation through the most trying of times. Total war, which spanned the sector from the skies and space over the capital of the kingdom to the far side of hegemony space. Yet instead of weariness, her visage showed an icy calm. Slowly and with intent, Prime Minister Isabel Lattimore began speaking. "It is impossible for us, your comrades, up to now." Her voice was firm, enunciating every syllable at a measured pace. Cutter had already read the wording. Her speech had been carefully scripted, to cover the government both legally and politically. There had to be no misunderstanding of what she was saying. Her resolve had to be obvious and clear. That was the only way lives of friendly spacers could be saved. "To allow your fine ships to fall into the power of the neo-hegemony enemy." Lattimore paused a moment, her eyes burning through the display. "We are determined to fight on until the end, and if we win, as we think we shall never forget that the Aurelian Republic was our ally, that our interests are the same as hers, and that our common enemy is the neo-hegemony." Cutter flicked his gaze to the tactical holotank lying recessed in the center of the bridge. The fleet formation began to spread, like a hand grasping over the patchwork of the station. Within the makeshift slips lay four of the Republic's mighty battleships, five of their destroyers and a carrier, a force which could change the course of the war if it fell into the wrong hands. "Should we conquer, we solemnly declare that we shall restore the greatness and territory of the Republic. For this purpose we must make sure that the best ships of your navy are not used against us by the common foe." KSS Achilles slipped into her position on the right flank of the huge battlecruiser KSS Cronus, Admiral Rihanna Albright's sleek flagship. Beyond her, Achilles' sister ship Ajax took the left position. Between them, the two cruisers, Spartan and Knight, and nine accompanying destroyers filled the gaps. "In these circumstances, the Kingdom government has instructed me to demand that the Republic fleet now at Algon Station shall act in accordance with one of the following alternatives." Lattimore stared hard into the camera, leaving no doubt as to her resolution. Cutter shifted his weight to his other foot, his stomach churning. Then remembered himself. Image was everything before the crew, especially when they might be called upon to do something questionable. He clasped his hands behind his back to stop his fidgeting. This was the moment when they would find out whether they would have to shed blood this day. "Join with us, and continue the fight until victory against the neo-hegemony enemy, or return to Starbase Victory with us under a reduced crew, who would be repatriated at the earliest moment. If either of these courses is adopted by you, we will restore your ships to the Aurelian Republic at the conclusion of the war, or pay full compensation if they are damaged." Now it was time for the sweetener. Cutter leaned forward. There was no way in hell any Republic ship would fight against the hegemony, not after the Neo-Executors had let it be known they'd gather up as many friends and families of the refugee crews as they could find. They would have them installed as guests in their facilities before the day was out, an honor from which they would never return. To the aft of Cronus, another huge ship, the carrier Corvus, began dispensing a blinking line of icons. The transponders were on, blaring the Cyclone torpedo bomber's presence, letting the Republic see the launch of even more opponents, hoping that would ease their decision even more. "Alternately, if you feel bound to stipulate that your ship should not be used against the hegemony lest they break the terms of your armistice, then you must demilitarize to our satisfaction, or perhaps allow your vessels to be entrusted to, say, the Federation and remain safe until the end of the war." The Cyclones flocked around their hold points. The ships of the fleet were where they needed to be to rain fire down on the base. Everyone was in position. Everyone was ready to go. Cutter lowered himself into his seat, his fingers tapping unbidden on the leather of his armrest. The churning in his gut was even worse than during the headlong rush to rescue the expeditionary force from the death trap of Port Rorion. Only this wasn't nerves. It was shame, for what they were about to do if the Republic's admiral in charge over there didn't do what he needed to do to save his spacers' lives. "If you refuse these fair offers," Latimore's voice lowered, genuine sorrow lacing her words, "I must, with profound regret, require you to scuttle your ships. Finally, failing the above, I have orders from the Kingdom government to use whatever force may be necessary to prevent your ships from falling into hegemony or their allies' hands." The Prime Minister allowed silence to fill the calm for long seconds, letting her words settle into the listening ears. This theater was as much for the spacers of the Kingdom fleet as for the enemy. They had to know that the Republic was being given every possible chance. For this, if the Kingdom's offer was rebuffed, to be the Republic's fault. For their own consciences, if nothing else. And Cutter supposed for historical record. "You have 1 hour to state your intentions." Lattimore's face disappeared, replaced by that of Admiral Rihanna Albright, the flag officer in charge of the expedition out here in the Ishtar system. "Ladies, gentlemen," Albright spoke, and her voice held none of the regret, false or otherwise, that Lattimore's had contained. Instead, she spoke with utter clarity and conviction, and even if Cutter was hearing it right, eagerness. It wasn't often an admiral got to unleash the firepower of their entire fleet, especially one as impressive as Albright commanded. "This may be a grisly business we are about to undertake. Rest assured, whatever happens this day, the Republic fleet must not fall into hegemony hands, and we will do whatever it takes to ensure it does not." She paused, her eyes boring through the screen, her head aggressively tilted forward as if she were a fighter going into the ring. "If they move without signaling their surrender, then my intention is to open fire. I do not expect delay or hesitation when, if I give that order. They are having their chance as we speak. Whatever happens this day, it's on them. Albright out." Tap, tap, tap. Cutter's fingers beat against the armrest. What he would do if faced with an ultimatum like the puppies had just received, sitting near defenseless, having fled to a strange foreign base, low on fuel, low on friends, still burning with a need to battle against the occupation, yet knowing that fighting on would mean his wife and child would be consigned to the Neo's torture chambers and execution rooms as an example to others not to defy the will of the hegemony. Tap, tap, tap. But if those ships switched allegiance or were captured and flew under the hegemony's flag, then the cost in lives and ships it would take to destroy them in open space, dare he say it in a fair fight, would be unbearable. The clock ticked closer to Lattimore's deadline. Other than the soft chatter from the comm, a melancholy silence reigned over the bridge. Cutter leaned back, his gaze drifting up from the holotank beneath his command podium, showing blinking icons of the ships around Achilles to the huge screen wrapping around the forward section of the oblong-shaped bridge. Algon Station swept over the Ishtar Dyson sphere. Half of the massive ancient artifact was dark, while the other side was lit by the distant binary companion to the star within. What, Cutter mused, would whoever created that huge thing think of humanity and their conflicts? Even this, a war which was quickly ramping up to be the biggest ever to be fought, must seem petty and insignificant for a race which could build an artifact around an entire star. No matter. They had long gone, leaving their arid desert and cloying jungle-filled legacy behind. "I'm showing a spike in Republic's reactor," Lieutenant Commander Eve Banning suddenly barked, her taut voice breaking through Cutter's pondering. "And Pride, and all ships, sir. They're spooling up their fusion reactors, getting ready to move." "Damn it, don't do this. Do not call our bluff." Cutter leaned forward, He felt a tremor reach his hands. He clenched his fists. He'd been in combat before, but this was going to be different. This was going to be murder. Don't make us do this.
They're retracting moorings, sir. I'm showing Republic is activating her EW shroud.
Banning turned to him, her eyes wide.
I have a signal from Admiral Albright.
This was it. The order he dreaded was about to be spoken. He gave a terse nod. Albright appeared on his console, the tendons in her neck protruding. Perhaps even she was feeling the tragedy of what was about to happen. But her next words were simple and to the point.
All ships, open fire.
Cutter didn't delay. He turned to Lieutenant Commander Haynes, his gunnery officer. No matter his personal feelings, duty trumped it all.
Open fire. Heavy pulse. All turrets, go on.
Aye, aye,
Haynes snapped back. Thumps resonated through Achilles's massive hull as her heavy pulse cannons fired. Explosions blossomed over the station, savage in their violence but pinpoint in their accuracy. They weren't there to destroy the base and kill the scavengers, traitors, and families within. They were simply innocent bystanders to what was happening. No, they were there to destroy their former allies. Confined to their slips, still preparing to move and unable to bring the full weight of their weapons to bear, the Republic ships took shot after shot. The Cyclone torpedo bombers surged forward. Pouncing on the ships, their own fearsome torpedoes lancing ahead of them, streaking into the once friendly vessels. The massive armored frames of the battleships shuddered under the horrendous punishment. Firing gases billowed out of the gaping chasms torn in their flanks. The first died. Republic simply crumbled. She ablated away under the weight of fire as if she were a melting candle. Debris fell off her in the withering fire. A roiling maelstrom of explosions replaced what was once a mighty battleship. Then her sister ships followed, one after another. The barrage lasted an hour. Thousands of pulse rounds riddled the vulnerable ships, reducing them to wrecked carcasses, still trapped in their moorings and slips. The proud warships didn't even have the chance to offer more than a token resistance of the occasional blue bolt of a pulse shot, easily absorbed by the Kingdom vessel's dispersion shields. And then the Republic fleet was no more. Admiral Albright appeared. Her normally aggressive features were subdued. She shook her head slightly, as if even she were saddened by what she had just seen.
All ships, she said. It's time to go home.
There was nothing else to say. No verbal backslapping, no gleeful boast of victory. Nothing. In perfect formation, the Kingdom fleet banked away from Algon Station, the Cyclones swarming back to the flight deck of their carrier. The Republic ships had been reduced to shattered ruins lodged in the mooring slips, which had become their graves. And nearly 1,300 Republic spacers were dead along with their vessels. Chapter 2. Admiral Sarvan. Vadir System, Thoth Shipyard. Admiral Valen Torres Sarvan stood, his hands clasped behind his back, staring through the sloped window at the broken gray crags and pitch-black, shadow-filled craters of the asteroid. The light of the desolate system star washed over the surface and through into the room, the red of its glow reflecting the somberness of his mood. Next to him, his captain, Redora Lasik, leaned forward, the look of eagerness on her face a complete contrast to the hidden nervousness of his own feelings. Any time now, he'd be here. The architect of their current situation, why good boys and girls were being sent into the meat grinder of a war which should never have been waged. Yet he admitted to himself the campaigns that had been fought had been the most successful in history. Flashes of incoming jump drives rippled in space. A dozen. More. The specks of objects poured out of the dissipating cascades of exotic particles. Wolf space supremacy fighters, arrayed in tight pairs, streaked over the dark, rocky surface of the asteroid surface, so close their engine wash kicked the dust up from the surface, leaving billowing clouds which would take days or longer to settle in the low gravity of the asteroid housing Thal's shipyard. The elite fighters were guarding against any last-minute security breaches, even out here in one of the most secretive places in the hegemony. The Kingdom Aerospace fighters would be desperate for the opportunity to be here, to strike against him. The course of the war would be changed in a heartbeat, or maybe the reports of his ever-increasing paranoia were true, in which case the fighters were here as much to act as a show of strength for any itinerant officer with aspirations beyond their station. Perhaps he was the subject of that message. Sarvan gave a scoff. Maybe he was as paranoid as their guest these days.
At his barely subdued outburst, Lasik looked at him quizzically, then gave a shrug as if disregarding her commanding officer's odd ways. Something bigger arrived amidst another twinkling cascade of exotic particles, a jump-capable troop transport. It was standard as far as Sarvan could see, nothing special about it, except for what it contained, for whom it contained. It arrived. Sarvan turned on his heels, hooking a finger into the collar of his tight dress uniform to relieve the pressure of the starched material on his throat. Best behavior, Valen. Comrade Dora, it's time to greet our guest. General Arya Torhest sat in the plush leather chair, her chin resting on her fist as she looked through the window of the jump transport. Beyond lay an unremarkable gray potato-shaped asteroid, orbiting far from the primary of this barren star system. Even the surface placements, a multitude of which must surely be tracking them, were invisible to the naked eye, and Hest warranted all but the most powerful of sensors. The mass rolled gently, their perspective changing as the transport arced around toward its destination. Around them, the lethal wolf fighters prowled, keeping a watchful eye for enemies, foreign or domestic. A moment later, the narrow end of the asteroid became visible. Only instead of more rock, there was a dark hole stretching deep into inky blackness. Chatter washed across the comm. A circle of lights blazed on, chasing the shadows away. More illumination activated, creating lines running deep into the core of the asteroid and showing the course the transport's pilot must take. A magnificent accomplishment, no? Even sitting just over the central aisle from Ravanche, she could barely hear him. His voice was quiet and weak. It was as if he didn't quite have the nerve to speak up in a group. Or maybe it was a reflection of who, or more accurately, what the man really was, the head of the dreaded executors, the not-so-secret police of the Neo-movement, resolute in their hunting of logists, dissidents, and the genetically impure, and those deemed unworthy of a place in the so-called bright future promised by Neo-Galton hegemony. Her skin crawled at his mere presence. The contempt she wanted to show nearly crept onto her face, an expression she quickly subdued and replaced with a tolerant smile. People had disappeared for less. She was getting better at hiding her true feelings, but sometimes, just sometimes, she was tempted to show what she really felt for these people. She turned to him, looking into his watery eyes. Before she could reply, the man sitting next to the head executor clasped a hand on his shoulder and leaned forward, his eyes locked with a piercing intensity on what was through the window. "Indeed it is." His voice was loud, firm, cutting and confident, a marked contrast to Ravanche's. Unlike anyone else in the hegemony, he was the one person who truly had nothing to fear from the secret policeman. Ravanche's loyalty was utterly unwavering, the executor holding a devotion for him bordering on religious fanaticism. The Prime. He looked unremarkable. His uniform, the plain working rig of the army. The only adornment separating him from a regular officer was a dark sash with a silver brooch of the black sun glistening on it and a tasteless soul patch of beard on his chin. "This facility is truly a testament to the ingenuity of the Galton people." Hest forced herself not to roll her eyes. One of the things she had found strangest about the Prime, now that he was spending more time with the man, was the fact that his public persona matched his private one. He never dropped his impassioned rhetoric. It wasn't as if he secretly held different views to those he portrayed to the masses. His opinions and policies were untempered by pragmatism, even to his most trusted counsel. If she didn't so abhor what the Neo-Party stood for, she'd actually appreciate that lack of guile, knowing he was no different behind closed doors as when addressing the public. Say what you would about the racist, probably mad bastard, it was no different. Perhaps that was what the Galton people appreciated, not the message itself, but the honesty behind it. The transport swept around into the portal. The strips of lights running along the entrance blurred by, a testament to the sheer size of the base and how deep they were going into the bowels of the asteroid. Suddenly, the transport emerged into a huge chamber hollowed out in the rocky core. It was lit by red floodlights, the same color as the star outside, only in here it gave the impression of heat, as if the place were a forge. And in a manner of speaking, it was. An ominous silhouette lay within the space, yet the transport flew so close to it, not all was distinguishable. A wall of battle steel rolled by, occasionally punctuated by the flash of a portal or window. Then the transport rose, swooping under the huge imposing barrel of a main battery cannon, easily twice the length of the jump transport itself. The big picture was lost in how close they flew to it, but the hint she was seeing spoke of something truly massive and devastatingly powerful. Silence washed through the transport as the occupants admired the glimpses of what they were looking at. They careened around the rear of the ship, past the nozzles of engines the size of office blocks, before surging up the ship's monumental flank. Dozens of smaller weapon emplacements flashed by. Flak cannon, light pulsars, and the fearsomely sized secondary batteries. Even Hest, as cynical and war-weary as she'd grown after the Asteria campaign, couldn't help but feel a beat of admiration as she looked at the huge beast. The construction of something such as this really was something to be proud of.
"Magnificent," the Prime uttered, mirroring her thoughts. "Truly magnificent."
Sarvan watched the transport breach the atmosphere field of the docking bay, leaving a shimmering ripple. It slipped across the congested hangar of the huge base on a humming repulsor field and settled to the metal grid of the flight deck. He gave the chamber one last check. There was no hiding the fact this was a working facility. The banners proudly showing the black sun may have hid the worst of the barnacles of equipment adorning the walls and the cranes hanging down, but the smell of industry in the piles of stores marred the vista for the visiting leader of the hegemony. 2,065 men and women filled the chamber, standing at ease, arrayed in squares signifying their positions and departments. The white dress uniforms of the officers at the front, the gray of the enlisted, the green of the army contingent, the suits of the civilian contractors who would be joining them on any maiden voyage. The whine of the transport's engines spooled down, leaving the huge space silent. As if to fill the absence of noise, the senior warrant spacer shouted, "Attention!" As one, the crew snapped their legs together, their heels stomping the deck. The door of the transport rotated down, turning into a ramp with the ringing thud of metal striking metal. A silhouette appeared in the hatchway. 2,064 right fists snapped to the left side of their chest. As one, the crew roared the same two words, "Hail Prime!" Except Sarvan, standing at the head of the company next to his captain, Radora Lasik. The Prime prowled down the steps, looking left and right, taking in the ship's company. His eyes locked onto Sarvan's, boring into them as the Admiral stood, his hand locked to his forehead in the salute of the old Imperium.
"Admiral!"
The Prime stepped in front of him and cocked his head as his small eyes narrowed. "I find my pleasure at your achievements here rapidly turning to displeasure." Sarvan held the man's piercing stare as long as he could bear, then motion caught his eye from the ramp. The slippery eel Revanche stepped down, taking in the scene. His mouth opened in what looked to be a distressed sigh as he saw Sarvan standing, frozen in his quaint salute. The secret policeman shook his head, his expression maudlin, as if he regretted and was sad at what he was seeing.
"Apologies, my Prime. I simply sought to honor you with tradition."
Sarvan snapped his right fist down, then back up with a clenched fist to beat his chest in the approved Neo-Hegemony salute. The Prime's stern look changed to one of condescending amusement. Then he chuckled.
"Misjudged, perhaps. We are in a new era, after all."
"That we are, my Prime.
Speaking of which..."
The Prime lowered his voice and leaned close. Sarvan fought the urge to rock back on his heels away from him.
"I received your memorandum."
"Sir,"
Sarvan responded. Try as he might, he couldn't meet the Prime's intense gaze. Instead, he locked his eyes on the man's nose.
"Perhaps now is not the time to discuss it."
The Prime still didn't return his salute, leaving Sarvan and the ship's company standing, their hands across their chests.
"But I feel your impassioned pleas deserve an immediate response. I will say my opinion has not changed. The Logists are a blight on the purity of our race. Their cleansing will continue."
Sarvan fought to stop his teeth, baring in a snarl. The Prime and his fucking obsession with the Logists and genetic purity. How that race should be expunged from the galaxy for some perceived failing of 1,000 years ago. It was only by Father Terra's grace the Revanche had not yet unearthed the fact that Sarvan's grandmother was one. If the Executor had, then it was more likely he would find himself in one of the rumored camps than his current position as an admiral in the Astral.
"In fact," the Prime tapped a forefinger to his lips thoughtfully, "there is no need to waste time discussing this further. That is my final word."
With a casual breeziness, the Prime stepped back and bumped his fist to his chest, releasing the crew from their salute. Sarvan lowered his hand to behind his back, taking the at-ease position.
"Of course, my Prime."
Sarvan managed to somehow keep his voice from a frustrated growl as someone else disembarked the transport. He frowned, seeing who it was.
So the rumors are true.
General Arya Torhest was accompanying the Prime. The Prime had adopted the hero of Asteria as his ward, promoting her when some, most likely Revanche, would have had her shot or worse for her defiance of orders, for pressing the attack on the beleaguered kingdom forces at Port Rorion when she'd been told expressly not to. A pleasant enough reflection on her that she'd used her initiative to slam home their advantage, perhaps. Except when Sarvan's friend and predecessor, Admiral Karth, had done the same thing, attacking and destroying the kingdom carrier Falcon and her flotilla in defiance of orders, he found himself damn near cashiered, or worse. There was nothing, Sarvan had often ruminated, like the random-seeming offering of punishment and reward to help encourage indecisiveness. It was something, at least, that the hegemony hadn't quite managed to expunge the old guard. People like Sarvan, people like Hest and her commanding officer, Galen. If the hegemony treated their senior military officers like what was happening in the people's worlds, then they'd have long since been placed against a wall and shot. Sarvan gave a mental shrug. It was welcome, he supposed, to be meeting another genuinely capable combat commander rather than a neo-sycophant, as seemed to be the norm these days. And if rumors were true, in some circles at least, then she was as displeased with the hegemony leadership and the war as he was, as were others in senior military positions as well. Of course, nothing could be proven. No one was willing to be completely honest. Yet. And the fact she'd been promoted might mean one of two things. Either she'd genuinely bought into the neo-cause, or Revanche was taking, on behalf of the Prime, the view he should keep his friends close and his enemies closer. Regardless, perhaps a conversation awaited with the general, a gentle test to find out if their views really did align.
"Come, my Prime," Sarvan said, putting the thought to one side for the time being. "Refreshments await. I appreciate your journey here to Thoth has been long."
Sarvan turned, gesturing with his hand down the red carpet between the thousands of men and women forming the ship's company, all of which had been laid out for the undisputed tyrant of the neo-hegemony. The red light of the dock spilled into the sumptuously adorned mess. Canapés from all throughout the Arcadian sector and beyond filled the table in an impressive and delicious spread. But Behemoth was the true vision to be admired. He squatted aggressively in the long cylinder of the docks, now brightly lit. Everything from the hammerhead of his prow to the massive cluster of engines shouted "War Machine." Behind him, a second equally massive vessel could be seen lodged deeper in the dockyards, this one still in the midst of construction. Behemoth's soon-to-be-named brother ship. Captain Lasik animatedly entertained Revanche, apparently unintimidated by the fact a single wrong word would find her with a noose around her neck. She was young. New, without the protection of decades of service. Maybe she was counting on the fact she was a card-carrying member of the Neo-Party to insulate her from such risks. Not something, Sarvan understood, anyone should rely on in these uncertain times. Or, Sarvan supposed, perhaps she was simply an executor. They were everywhere these days. In fact, he eyed the two of them while straining to keep the suspicion from his gaze. It would be faintly ridiculous if Revanche hadn't placed one of his minions in a senior position on the hegemony's brand-new flagship. And it didn't get any more senior than the ship's captain. Except for him, that was. He was under no illusions, knowing that his service and his popularity with his spacers were all that protected him. But more and more trusted officers were being replaced by sycophants. And soon he'd be alone, and vulnerable. Then... well, if he hadn't acted by then he would likely be a guest of the very man in this room.
"He's a useful man to keep around," a voice murmured in his ear.
Turning, he met the bemused gaze of the faintly smiling Prime.
"Carrot and stick, as they say. He provides a healthy sense of fear, which helps harden the resolve of even our occasionally wavering soldiers."
Sarvan flashed a thin smile in return.
"And my Prime, what is the carrot?"
"Why, me, of course," the Prime said as his smile grew to a wide grin, a grin as comforting as that of a hunting shark.
"I provide the inspiration, instills the pride in our soldiers and citizens, a beacon of hope amid the turgid recession our nation finds itself in."
"Of course."
"You are still uncertain of me, aren't you, Valen?"
The Prime let the smile drop from his face, to be replaced by a fanatical earnestness. He held his hand up as if forestalling any response. We're not so different, you and I, both of us fondly remembering the days of the Imperium for all its flaws, and now both of us wishing Galton to attain its rightful place as the capital of an empire which will last for all eternity.
Maybe, Sarvan conceded.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?